This is Bob Martin for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This opening music is courtesy of Joseph Martin, Professor of Music at the Lamont School of Music at Denver University. Welcome to the Poetry Corner. The following piece was written by Mary Howitt in 1829. It is a cautionary tale about people who use flattery to get evil ends. The ending is especially pointed at children, warning them of strangers, the spider and the fly. "Will you walk into my parlor?" said the spider to the fly. "'Tis the prettiest little parlor that ever you did spy. The way into my parlor is up a winding stair, and I have many pretty things to show when you are there." "Oh, no, no," said the little fly, "to ask me is in vain, for who goes up your winding stair can ne'er come down again." "I'm sure you must be weary, dear, with soaring up so high. Will you rest upon my little bed?" said the spider to the fly. "There are pretty curtains drawn around, the sheets are fine and thin, and if you like to rest a while, I'll snugly tuck you in." "Oh, no, no," said the little fly, "for I've often heard it said, they never, never wake again who sleep upon your bed." Said the cunning spider to the fly, "Dear friend, what shall I do to prove the warm affection I've always felt for you? I have within my pantry good store of all that's nice. I'm sure you're very welcome. Will you please to take a slice?" "Oh, no, no," said the little fly. "Kind sir, that cannot be. I've heard what's in your pantry, and I do not wish to see." "Sweet creature," said the spider, "you're witty and you're wise. How handsome are your gauzy wings, how brilliant are your eyes. I have a little looking-glass upon my parlor shelf. If you step in one moment, dear, you shall behold yourself." "I thank you, gentle sir," she said, "for what you're pleased to say, and bidding you good morning now, I'll call another day." The spider turned him round about and went into his den, for well he knew the silly fly would soon be back again. So he wove a subtle web in a little corner sly, and set his table ready to dine upon the fly. Then he came out to his door again, and merrily did sing, "Come hither, hither, pretty fly, with pearl and silver wing. Your robes are green and purple, there's a crest upon your head. Your eyes are like the diamond bright, but mine are dull as lead." Alas, alas, how very soon this silly little fly, hearing his wily flattering words, came slowly flitting by. With buzzing wings she hung aloft, then near and nearer drew, thinking only of her brilliant eyes and green and purple hue. Thinking only of her crested head, poor foolish thing at last, up jumped the cunning spider and fiercely held her fast. He dragged her up his winding stair until his dismal den within his little parlor, but she ne'er came out again. And now, dear little children, who may the story read, to idle, silly, flattering words I pray ye ne'er give heed. Unto an evil counselor close heart and ear and eye, and take a lesson from this tale of the spider and the fly. The sense of flattery to obtain evil ends hit a nerve, as the poem has been told to many generations of children. In 1865, Lewis Carroll wrote a parody of the poem for his book Alice in Wonderland. It was called The Lobster Quadrille. But keeping in mind the purpose of the original poem, Carroll's work is better known as The Mock Turtle Song. "Will you walk a little faster?" said a whiting to a snail. "There's a porpoise close behind us, and he's treading on my tail. See how eagerly the lobsters and the turtles all advance. They're wanting on the shingle. You will come and join the dance? Will you? Won't you? Will you? Won't you? Will you join the dance? Will you? Won't you? Will you? Won't you? Won't you join the dance?" You can really have no notion how delightful it will be when they take us up and throw us with the lobsters out to sea." But the snail replied, "Too far, too far," and gave a look askance. Said he thanked the whiting kindly, but he would not join the dance. Would not, could not, would not, could not, would not join the dance. Would not, could not, would not, could not, could not join the dance. "What matters is how far we go," his scaly friend replied. "There is another shore, you know, upon the other side. The further off from England, the nearer is to France. Then turn not pale, beloved snail, but come and join the dance. Will you, won't you? Will you, won't you? Will you join the dance? Will you, won't you? Will you, won't you? Won't you join the dance?" Poems written for children and about children are always touching. Maybe none as much as the following work of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. The author's first wife had died of a miscarriage in 1835, and he remarried in 1843 and had six children, five surviving. And the three youngest are the ones mentioned in this poem. They were 10, 7, and 5 when the work was first published in 1860. The poignancy of the work lies in the fact that the mother dies in a fire accident in 1861. The Children's Hour. Between the dark and the daylight, when the light is beginning to lower, comes a pause in the day's occupations that is known as the children's hour. I hear in the chamber above me the patter of little feet, the sound of a door that is opened, and voices soft and sweet. For my study I see in the lamplight descending the broad hall stair, grave Alice and laughing Allegra, and Edith with golden hair. A whisper, and then a silence, yet I know by their merry eyes they are plotting and planning together to take me by surprise. A sudden rush from the stairway, a sudden raid from the hall, by three doors left unguarded, they enter my castle wall. They climb up into my turret, or the arms and back of my chair. If I try to escape, they surround me. They seem to be everywhere. They almost devour me with kisses, their arms about me entwine, till I think of the Bishop of Bingen and his mass tower on the Rhine. Do you think, O blue-eyed banditti, because you have scaled the wall, such an old mustache as I am is not a match for you all? I have you fast in my fortress and will not let you depart, but put you down into the dungeon in the round tower of my heart. And there will I keep you forever, yes, forever and a day, till the wall shall crumble to ruin and molder in dust away. And then there are the reflections back on childhood from latter years, as this work of John Greenleaf Whittier, written in 1855, The Barefoot Boy. Blessings on thee, little man, barefoot boy with cheek of tan, with thy turned-up pantaloons and thy merry whistle tunes, with thy red lip, redder still, kissed by strawberries on the hill, with the sunshine on thy face, through thy torn brim's jaunty grace, from my heart I give thee joy. I was once a barefoot boy. Prince thou art, the grown-up man, only is Republican. Let the million-dollar ride, barefoot trudging at his side. Thou hast more than he can buy in the reach of ear and eye, outward sunshine, inward joy. Blessings on thee, barefoot boy. All thy boyhood's painless play, sleep that wakes in laughing day, health that mocks the doctor's rules, knowledge never learned of schools, of the wild bee's morning chase, of the wild flower's time and place, flight of fowl and habitude, of the tenants of the wood, how the tortoise bears its shell, how the woodchuck digs his cell, how the ground mole sinks his well, how the robin feeds her young, how the oriole's nest is hung, where the whitest lilies blow, where the freshest berries grow, where the groundnut trails its vine, where the wood grape's clusters shine. Of the black wasp's cunning way, mason of his walls of clay, and the architectural plans of gray hornet artisans, for eschewing books and tasks, nature's answers all he asks. Hand in hand with her he walks, face to face with her he talks. Part and parcel of her joy, blessings on thee, barefoot boy. Over boyhood's time of June, crowding years in one brief moon, when all things I heard or saw, me, their master, waited for. I was rich in flowers and trees, humming birds and humming bees. For my sport, the squirrel played, plied the snouted mole his spade. For my task, the blueberry cone, purpled over hedge and stone. For my task, the blueberry cone, purpled over hedge and stone, laughed the brook for my delight, through the day and through the night, whispering at the garden wall, talk with me from fall to fall. Mine the sand-rimmed pickerel pond, mine the walnut slopes beyond, mine on bending orchard trees, apples of Hesperides. Still as my horizon grew, larger grew my riches too. All the world I saw or knew seemed a complex Chinese toy fashioned for a barefoot boy. Oh, for festal dainty spread, like my bowl of milk and bread, pewter spoon and bowl of wood on the doorstone, gray and rude, o'er me like a regal tent, cloudy ribbed, the sunset bent, purple curtain fringed with gold, looped in many a wind-swung fold, while for music came play of the Pied Frog's orchestra, and to light the noisy choir lit the fly his lamp of fire. I was monarch, pomp and joy, waited on thee, barefoot boy. Cheerily then, my little man, live and laugh as boyhood can. Though the flinty slopes be hard, stubble-speared, the new-morn sward, every morn shall lead thee through fresh baptisms of the dew. Every inning from thy feet shall the cool wind kiss the heat. All too soon these feet shall hide in the prison cells of pride, lose the freedom of the sod, like a colt's for work he be shod. Made to tread the mills of toil, up and down in ceaseless moil, happy if their track be found, never on forbidden ground. Happy if they sink not in quick and treacherous sands of sin. Ah, that thou couldst know thy joy, ere it passes, barefoot boy. Or from Edgar Guest, the author called The Poet of the People, written in 1917, The Happiest Days. You do not know it, little man, in your summer coat of tan, and your legs bereft of hose, and your peeling sunburned nose, with a stone bruise on your toe, almost limping as you go, running on your way to play through another summer day. Friend of birds and streams and trees, that your happiest days are these. Little do you think today, as you hurry to your play, that a lot of us grown old in the chase for fame and gold watch you as you pass along, gaily whistling bits of song, and in envy sit and dream of a long-neglected stream where long buried are the joys we possessed when we were boys. Little chap, you cannot guess all your sum of happiness. Little value do you place on your sunburned, freckled face. And if some shrewd fairy came offering sums of gold and fame for your summer days of play, you would barter them away and believe that you had made there and then a clever trade. Time was we were boys like you, bare of foot and sunburned too, and like you we never guessed all the riches we possessed. We'd have traded them back then for the hollow joys of men. We'd have given them all to be rich and wise in 43. For life never teaches boys just how precious are their joys. Youth has fled, and we are old. Some of us have fame and gold. Some of us are sorely scarred, for the way of age is hard. And we envy, little man, you your splendid coat of tan. Envy you your treasures rare, hours of joy beyond compare. For we know, by teaching stern, all that someday you must learn. And now, a kind of before and after in childhood from the heart and home poet of America, James Whitcomb Riley. The before, out to old Aunt Mary's. Wasn't it pleasant, O brother of mine, in those old days of the lost sunshine of youth, when the Saturday's chores were through, and the Sunday wood in the kitchen, too, and we went visiting, me and you, out to old Aunt Mary's? It all comes back so clear today, though I'm as bald as you are gray. Out by the barn lot and down the lane, we'd patter along in the dust again, as light as the tips on the drops of the rain, out to old Aunt Mary's. We crossed the pasture and through the wood, where the old gray snag of the poplar stood, where the hammering redheads hopped awry, and the buzzard raised in the clearing sky, and lolled and circled as we went by, out to old Aunt Mary's. And then in the dust of the road again, and the teams we met, and the countrymen, and the long highway with sunshine spread, as thick as butter on country bread, our cares behind and our hearts ahead, out to old Aunt Mary's. Why, I see her now in the open door, where the little gourds grew on the sides, and o'er the clapboard roof, and her face, ah me! Wasn't it good for a boy to see, and wasn't it good for a boy to be, out at old Aunt Mary's? The jelly, the jam, and the marmalade, and the cherry and quince preserves she made, and the sweet sour pickles of peach and pear with cinnamon in 'em, and all things rare, and the more we ate was the more to spare, out to old Aunt Mary's. And the old spring house in the cool green gloom of the willow trees in the cooler room, where the swinging shelves and the crocks were kept, where the cream and a golden languor slept, while the waters gurgled and laughed and wept, out to old Aunt Mary's. And as many a time have you and I, barefoot boys in the days gone by, knelt, and in tremulous ecstasies, dipped our lips into sweets like these, memory now is on her knees, out to old Aunt Mary's. And oh, my brother, so far away, this is to tell you that she waits today to welcome us. Aunt Mary fell asleep this morning, whispering, tell the boys to come. And all is well, out to old Aunt Mary's. And in the after, where the children used to play. The old farm home is mother's yet and mine, and filled it is with plenty and to spare. But we are lonely here in life's decline, though fortune smiles around us everywhere. We look across the gold of the harvest as of old, the corn, the fragrant clover, and the hay. But most we turn our gaze, as with eyes of other days, to the orchard where the children used to play. Oh, from our life's full measure and rich hoard of worldly treasure, we often turn our weary eyes away. And hand in hand we wander down the old path winding yonder to the orchard where the children used to play. Our sloping pasture lands are filled with herds, the barn and granary bins are bulging o'er. The grove's a paradise of singing birds, the woodland brook leaps laughing by the door. Yet lonely, lonely still, let us prosper as we will. Our old hearts seem so empty every way. We can only through a mist see the faces we have kissed in the orchard where the children used to play. Oh, from our life's full measure and rich hoard of worldly treasure, we often turn our weary eyes away. And hand in hand we wander down the old path winding yonder to the orchard where the children used to play. And now from A.A. Milne, the author of the Winnie the Pooh series. These stories were originally intended for his son, Christopher Robin Milne, and so the poem, Sneasels. Christopher Robin had weasels and sneasels. They bundled him into his bed. They gave him what goes with a cold in the nose and some more for a cold in the head. They wondered if weasels could turn into measles, if sneezels would turn into mumps. They examined his chest for a rash and the rest of his body for swellings and lumps. They sent for some doctors and sneezels and weasels to tell them what ought to be done. All sorts of conditions of famous physicians came hurrying round at a run. They all made a note of the state of his throat. They asked if he suffered from thirst. They asked if the sneezels came after the weasels, or if the first sneezel came first. They said, if you teasel, a sneasel or weasel, a measle may easily grow. But humor or pleasel the weasel or sneasel, the measle will certainly go. They expounded the reasons for sneasels and weasels, the manner of measles were new. They said, if he freezels and draughts and in breezels, that the teasels may even ensue. Christopher Robin got up in the morning. The sneasels had vanished away. And the look in his eye seemed to say to the sky, now, how to amuse them today? As a child, and then again as a parent, one of the greatest moments in life is Christmas. First from Phyllis Brooks from the late 1800s. He may best be known as the composer of the Christmas hymn, O Little Town of Bethlehem. He also penned this little poem, Christmas Everywhere. Everywhere, everywhere, Christmas tonight. Christmas in lands of the fir tree and pine. Christmas in lands of the palm tree and vine. Christmas where snow peaks stand solemn and white. Christmas where cornfields stand sunny and bright. Christmas where children are hopeful and gay. Christmas where old men are patient and gray. Christmas where peace, like a dove in the flight, broods o'er brave men in the thick of the fight. Everywhere, everywhere, Christmas tonight. For the Christ child who comes is the master of all. No palace too great, no cottage too small. And then from a man who didn't want to acknowledge authorship of a poem for 14 years because he thought it would not be appropriate to his scholastic standing. Written for his children in 1823, The Night Before Christmas by Clement C. Moore. 'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wandering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and a tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word but went straight to his work. He filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night! And so, from the poet's eye, we have the family gathered together around the Christmas tree. To complete the poet's picture, we'll return to Edward Guest for two more little pieces. The first, entitled Mother. Never a sigh for the cares that she bore for me. Never a thought of the joys that flew by. Her one regret that she couldn't do more for me. Thoughtless and selfish, her master was I. Oh, the long nights that she came at my call to me. Oh, the soft touch of her hands on my brow. Oh, the long years that she gave up her all to me. Oh, how I yearn for her gentleness now. Slave to her baby, yes, that was the way of her, counting her greatest of services small. Words cannot tell what this old heart would say of her, mother, the sweetest and fairest of all. I am selfish in my wishing every sort of joy for you. I am selfish when I tell you that I'm wishing skies of blue bending over you every minute, and a pocket full of gold, and as much of love and gladness as a human heart can hold. 'Cause I know beyond all question that if such a thing could be, as you corner in life's riches, you would share 'em all with me. I am selfish in my wish in every sorrow from your way, with no troubled thoughts to fret you at the closing of the day. And it's selfishness that bids me wish you comforts by the score, and all the joys you long for, and on top of them, some more. 'Cause I know, old tried and faithful, that if such a thing could be, as you corner in life's riches, you would share them all with me. And now, Father. Used to wonder just why Father never had much time for play. Used to wonder why he'd rather work each minute of the day. Used to wonder why he never loafed along the road and shirked. Can't recall a time whenever Father played while others worked. Father didn't dress in fashion, sort of hated clothing new. Style with him was not a passion. He had other things in view. Boys are blind to much that's going on about him day by day, and I had no way of knowing what became of Father's pay. All I knew was when I needed shoes, I got 'em on the spot. Everything for which I pleaded, somehow, Father always got. Wondered season after season why he never took a rest, and that I might be the reason. Then I never even guessed. Father set a store on knowledge. If he'd lived to have his way, he'd have sent me off to college, and the bill's been glad to pay. That, I know, was his ambition. Now and then, he used to say, he'd have done his earthly mission on my graduation day. Saw his cheeks were getting paler, didn't understand just why. Saw his body growing frailer, then at last I saw him die. Rest had come, his tasks were ended, calm was written on his brow. Father's life was big and splendid, and I understand it now. This is Bob Martin for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And thank you for listening in to The Poetry Corner.